Well, thank you. And I know my voice can kind of carry, so I'm going to kind of move my microphone away just a little bit. But my name's Hannah Kessler, and the name of our company is called The Money Multiplier. Actually, we're based out of Florida. I live in Daytona Beach. I grew up in the Kansas City area. And this concept that I'm about to share with y'all, you know, I'm not here to sell you anything, okay? So you can put your checkbooks, your credit cards, your social security numbers back inside of your pocketbook, all right? We're just going to learn, and I want to teach you about a process and a concept called the infinite banking concept. Some of y'all, maybe you have heard of this before, but maybe it was never explained to you in this manner. And some of y'all, maybe this is the first time you're ever hearing about this, and I'm about to wow some of your minds. So with this concept, you know, you guys are really, really great at making the money, okay? You guys are great at making the money, but you suck at keeping it. And I just want to show you this concept and a process of how to keep the money in the family. I don't want you to change anything that you're already doing, because like I said, y'all are great at making the money, but all we're going to do is where the money goes first, changing where that money goes first. I don't want you to work any harder, take any additional risk, or lose control of the cash. We're just changing and adding this one additional step. So we're going to get into it. So the name of our company, The Money Multiplier, you have my contact info up here on the screen, our website, themoneymultiplier.com, and then that's my cell phone and my email address as well, okay? Now, I got to tell y'all just a little bit about our background before we get into this, because, right, I mean, Dad's a chiropractor. We were not in this world whatsoever, and so that bald-headed guy right there, we'll see him tomorrow. His name's Brent Kessler. That's my dad, but Dad, he actually found himself at a chiropractic convention back in 2006, and he is sitting in the audience just like how y'all are right now, and then there was somebody up here on stage teaching about this concept. And Dad was sitting in the audience. He had his arms crossed, and he goes, "Man, that stuff looks really, really good, but it kind of looks just too good to be true." Have you guys seen something like that? Something too good to be true? So what Dad did is he bought Nelson's book. And I'll explain Nelson Nash here in a second. But he bought Nelson's book, and he went back home. He set it on the shelf, and he didn't do anything with the information. 2 years later, 2008, he went back to the same chiropractic convention, and he was greeted by about 10 or 12 of his colleagues, and they were coming up to him hooting and hollering about this banking concept. "Brent, isn't this concept cool? I'm able to pay my debts, pay the key employee salaries, finance the adjustment tables in the office, and I'm all able to do so, but by keeping the money in the family." And Dad thought to himself, "You know, maybe one or two of my closest colleagues could be lying to me, but there's no way 10 or 12 of my closest friends are lying to me right now." So that's when my family took action, was in 2008. And back at that time, Dad had almost $1 million of debt. And by implementing this concept, he paid it off in 39 months. 3 years, 3 months. He didn't work any harder, treat more patients, work more hours. He just changed where the money was going first. So we'll talk about it here today. Now, this concept as well, this is not something that we invented, not something that Nelson Nash invented, but I want you to understand where this information is coming from. So this black book right here, Becoming Your Own Banker, you can go to our website, themoneymultiplier.com. You can go on to Amazon. To be honest with y'all, I am not in the book selling business, okay? I just want you to understand where this information is coming from, because this concept, it is not new. This concept's actually been around longer than our tax code's been here, and tax code's only been here since 1930. So there's just so many features and benefits that you can do inside of here that you can't do on any vehicle in the planet. But I just want you to know where the information is coming from. And if you got a little ADD like myself, it also comes with 2 hours of audio. All right? All right. Here's my gift to you as well. For you guys being here, This is a book mapping out the millionaire mystery. This is a book that my dad and Chris Noggle actually wrote together. Some of y'all may know Chris Noggle. He's very active in real estate. If you go to YouTube, just look up his name. He's all over YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. He actually had a show on HGTV called Risky Builders. So go out there, go see what Chris Noggle's doing. But if you send me an email, Hannah spelled the same ways, forwards and backwards, Hannah@themoneymultiplier.com. I'll send you a copy of our ebook version of this, okay? However, if I had a preference, go with Nelson Nash's book first. Read this one and then read this one, okay? All right, so that's my gift for y'all. Now, to be totally clear,
some people got to have it.
Hey, it's me, Destin. Welcome back to Smarter Every Day. You've heard people say it's just like riding a bike, meaning it's really easy and you can't forget how to do it, right? But I did something. I did something that damaged my mind. It happened on the streets of Amsterdam, and I got really scared, honestly. I can't ride a bike like you can anymore. Before I show you the video of what happened, I need to tell you the backstory. Like many six-year-olds with a MacGyver mullet, I learned how to ride a bike when I was really young. I had learned a life skill, and I was really proud of it. Everything changed, though, when my friend Barney called me 25 years later. Where I work, the welders are geniuses, and they like to play jokes on the engineers. He had a challenge for me. He had built a special bicycle, and he wanted me to try to ride it. He had only changed one thing. When you turn the handlebar to the left, the wheel goes to the right. When you turn it to the right, the wheel goes to the left. I thought this would be easy, so I hopped on the bike, ready to demonstrate how quickly I could conquer this.
And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Destin Sandlin. First attempt riding the bicycle.
All right. So, the faster I go, the better.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. You can see that I'm laughing, but I'm actually really frustrated. In this moment, I had a really deep revelation. My thinking was in a rut. This bike revealed a very deep truth to me. I had the knowledge of how to operate the bike, but I did not have the understanding. Therefore, knowledge is not understanding. Look, I know what you're probably thinking. Destin's probably just an uncoordinated engineer and can't do it. But that's not the case at all. The algorithm that's associated with riding a bike in your brain is just that complicated. Think about it. Downwards force on the pedals, leaning your whole body, pulling and pushing the handlebars, gyroscopic precession in the wheels, every single force is part of this algorithm. And if you change any one part, it affects the entire control system. I do not make definitive statements that often, but I'm telling you right now, you cannot ride this bicycle. You might think you can, but you can't. I know this because I'm often asked to speak at universities and conferences, and I take the bike with me. It's always the same. People think they're going to try some trick or they're just going to power through it. It doesn't work. Your brain cannot handle this. For instance, this guy. I offered him $200 just to ride this bike 10 feet across the stage. Everybody thought he could do it.
No, you didn't understand. So, this way. All right, All right, so, whatever you're ready.
Yeah. Right leg!
No, you have to keep your feet on. Dude, look. All right, let's get together.
Yeah. Wait, what are the other way? Like, you gotta start rolling at least. Go. And go. Oh, God! All right, back up. Okay, wait.
Keep your feet on the pedal. Go.
Once you have a rigid way of thinking in your head, sometimes you cannot change that, even if you want to. So here's what I did. It was a personal challenge. I stayed out here in this driveway and I practiced about 5 minutes every day. My neighbors made fun of me. I had many wrecks, but after 8 months, this happened. One day I couldn't ride the bike, and the next day I could. It was like I could feel some kind of pathway in my brain that was now unlocked. It was really weird though. It's like there's this trail in my brain, but if I wasn't paying close enough attention to it, my brain would easily lose that neural path and jump back onto the old road it was more familiar with. Any small distractions at all, like a cell phone ringing in my pocket, would instantly throw my brain back to the old control algorithm and I would wreck, but at least I could ride it. My son is the closest person to me genetically, and he's been riding a normal bike for 3 years. That's over half his life. I wanted to know how long it would take him to learn how to ride a backwards bike, so I told him if he learned how to ride a backwards bike, he could go with me to Australia and meet a real astronaut. Are you gonna give up?
No.
Go ahead. This is how it starts. Look at this. This is such a big deal. Get up, you got it. Did you see his brain get it? So he, in how many weeks have we been doing this? 2 weeks? In 2 weeks, he did something that took me 8 months to do, which demonstrates that a child has more neuroplasticity, am I even saying that right, than an adult. It's clear from this experiment that children have a much more plastic brain than adults. That's why the best time to learn a language is when you're a young child. All right, today's bike log. I can ride smooth, I can ride fast. I'm thinking the experiment is over. Okay, now I'm in Amsterdam, a city that has more bicycles than people. The question is, can I ride a normal bike now? I mean, I've spent all this time unlearning how to ride a bike. If I go back and try to ride a normal one, will my brain mess up? So I've tweeted a Smarter Everyday meetup, if you will, and I'm gonna see if somebody brings a bicycle and I'm gonna try to ride a normal bike.
It's backwards.
This was one of the most frustrating moments of my life. I had ridden a normal bike since I was 6, but in this moment, I couldn't do it anymore. I had set out to prove that I could free my brain from a cognitive bias. But at this point, I'm pretty sure that all I proved is that I could only redesignate that bias.
So what you're not seeing is just a group of people here looking at me, looking at the strange American that can't ride a bike because they think I'm dumb. But I'm actually two levels deep into this because I've learned and unlearned. All right.
After 20 minutes of making a fool out of myself, suddenly my brain clicked back into the old algorithm. I can't explain it, but it happened in a very specific moment.
Yes. Got it. I'm back.
Yeah.
Oh, click. Hold it, click.
I got it.
Okay, there it is. There's the moment. Good. Okay, I can ride a bike.
I tried to explain this to the people around me, and they just didn't get it. They thought I was faking the previous 20 minutes, and I couldn't get anybody to believe me.
That looked like I faked that, didn't it?
Yeah.
Just a face.
You think I'm faking. You don't believe me.
That looks so weird. You were like, la, 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 and it's full.
You think I'm lying, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I
do. I'm not lying.
I felt like the only person on the planet who had ever unlearned how to ride a bike, and I couldn't articulate it to anyone because everybody just knew that you can't forget how to ride a bike. So I learned 3 things from this experiment. I learned that welders are often smarter than engineers. I learned that knowledge does not equal understanding. And I learned that truth is truth, no matter what I think about it. So be very careful how you interpret things, because you're looking at the world with a bias, whether you think you are or not. I'm Destin. You're getting smarter every day. Have a good one.
I like that video. That's a good one, right? So again, a lot of the things that we've been taught about money, dollars, and wealth may not actually be the truth. So I want you to keep an open mind as I walk through this concept and write your questions down, because I promise y'all, I will be here all weekend. Dad will be here tomorrow. We got 2 sessions tomorrow going on, so we will get your questions answered. Dad has always taught me a short pencil is better than a long memory. So write your questions down. Now, there's a gentleman by the name of Will Rogers. You know what Will Rogers says? He says, the problem in America isn't so much what people don't know, it's what they think they know that just ain't so. So again, I'd be careful of what you are looking at when it comes to your dollars, your money, and your wealth. So write your questions down and we'll get into it. So now we're going to talk about how does our money flow and the method to get all of our money back. Actually, y'all, before I get done here today, I'm going to show you how I buy my cars. All right. I don't even know you, but I know how you buy your cars. And the only reason I use cars, yes, I get it. Hannah, we're at a real estate convention. Why are we talking about cars? Well, you got to get in your car and go drive to all those deals, do you not? So everybody just gets cars. We've all bought in cars, driven cars, ridden in cars. So we just get cars. That's why I use it. But before I get done here today, I'm going to show you how I purchase my cars. All right, let's make believe this is a $20,000 bill. I go down to the car dealership. I hand over the money. They hand me the car. And then everybody walks away. Transaction's done. But I have a system in place where I go down to the dealership, hand over the money, they give me the car, and now I'm able to recapture all of that money that I spent on that car. Because I don't care how old you are, how much money do you have back for just the cars you've went and purchased in your lifetime up to this point? Here's a hint. Zero. So if I do nothing more than just show you how to get all the money back for the cars you're buying in life, I think it's going to be a pretty cool day, is it not? So, we're going to talk about the mysteries of money, the machine. What is the machine we're going to be using to build our wealth? We're going to talk about the mission and the marathon. Y'all, I'm telling you right now, this is not a get-rich-quick kind of deal. This is a marathon and an additional step that we're adding to our financial life. We're going to talk about the millionaire and then the movement. All right, let's get into the fun stuff. You see three calculators up here on the screen. We are going to make believe that you are in the market and you want to go purchase a $25,000 car. And right now, down at your local bank account, you have $25,000 that's sitting in cash down at the bank. And we're going to make believe that you found a really, really good bank. And that bank is paying you 4% on the money. All right, I know they're not, but there's a method to my madness here, okay? So we're just going to make believe that you found a really, really good bank, and they're paying you 4% on that money. So you walk into the bank, and let's say that I'm your banker. You come up to me and say, Banker Hannah, I want to take out that $25,000 that's earning me 4%, and I want to go pay cash for my car. Y'all kind of bump up your chest like this. I'm going to pay cash for that car. Y'all love paying cash for things. You think when you pay cash for things, you don't got to pay any payments and you don't got to pay any interest. Is that true, though? We'll come back to it. So you walk in and you say, Hannah, I want to go pay cash for that car. And I turn to you and I say, no, no, no. Instead, how about I make you a loan for $25,000? I'm going to make you a loan for $25,000, and I'm going to charge you 6% interest. Now, if we have a loan for $25,000, how long is it normally going to take us to pay off the $25,000 loan? 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? Let's go with 5 years. 5 years or 60 months. Hannah, instead of you taking out the cash, I'm going to make you a loan for $25,000. I'm going to charge you 6% interest. And over the same equal time period of 5 years or 60 months, our bank is going to pay you more money on the $25,000 that you're earning at 4 than what you'll pay us, the $25,000 that you're borrowing at 6. In other words, can I make money earning 4 at the same time I'm paying 6? Well, no, right? I mean, if I earn 4, pay 6, 4 minus 6 equals negative 2. That doesn't make sense. Math ain't math in there, right? Banker told you the truth. Let's walk through it. If you take out that loan of $25,000, 6%, your monthly payment is $483.32 a month. Take the $483.32 times 60 months. That means you paid $28,999 for the car. So $25,000 in principal, about $4,000 in interest. Over here in your savings account, earning you 4%, the total ending balance is $30,525. So here's my question. Is the $30,525, is that a larger number than the $28,999? Or do y'all do math differently up here in Ohio than I do in Florida? It's a larger number. Why? Do we have any idea of what's going on? Compound interest, amortization. Here's what's going on. Your vehicle payment, this is on a decreasing scale. This is going down each and every month. Your savings account, this is going up each and every month. So one's going down, the other one's going up, but our minds aren't programmed to think that way. So with this short, simple exercise, I just wanted to prove to you that you can make money all day long earning four at the same time you're paying six. And y'all, run the math. Do you earning 10% and paying 20? You're still going to come out on top. It's just math. So why were these numbers important? Let's talk about the machine. The machine we're going to be using to build our wealth. Y'all ready for it? A whole life insurance policy with a mutually owned company that pays dividends. I wish y'all could be standing up here and see all of your faces right now. All right, before you run out of the room and you vomit on me saying, Hannah, I know everything there is to know about whole life insurance. Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, they told me whole life insurance is the worst place to put my money. I get it. Do you understand now why it took my dad 2 years to start this stuff? Because he was the person that would record Susie Orman every Thursday night. Here's my question. Why are we using whole life? Any ideas? Here's the number one reason. This is what the elite and the wealthy are doing. The number one purchasers of whole life insurance in the world are conventional banks. Conventional banks actually own more in whole life insurance than all of their land and their buildings combined. And a matter of fact, since 2013, banks have even quadrupled the amount of whole life insurance that they hold in their portfolio. Are they stupid? Or are they doing something the rest of us just don't know about? They're probably doing something. If not, write it down. I'll get back to it. Write it down. So, and I want you to go fact check me, y'all. Go Google something called BOLI, B-O-L-I. It stands for Bank-Owned Life Insurance. You can look up the big banks that we all know the names of, your small hometown banks, but I challenge you to go see and go look at where they're storing the money. Look right underneath their tier one capital. Whole life insurance is right there at the top. So again, are they stupid? Are they doing something the rest of us just may not know about? They're probably doing something. And y'all, this whole life policy, this is not the regular whole life policy that you go buy from your brother-in-law that sells life insurance. We all got a brother-in-law that sells life insurance. No, this has to be designed specifically for this high cash value banking. It's got to be designed for this banking concept. So, why was my 4 and 6% important? Inside of the policy contract, you get a guaranteed interest. Guaranteed interest inside of that policy contract. And the largest interest rate that the insurance company will charge you to take out a loan is 6%. So can we make money earning 4 at the same time we're paying 6? Yes. Following. Good. Now, let's talk a little bit about money, right? We agreed for our conversation here, the definition of money. The definition of money, it's nothing more than just a means of exchange. Well, what's the purpose of money? Well, the purpose of money is to go out and go buy the things in life. Send the kids to college, fund my retirement, find the investment properties I'm looking at, right? That's all the definition of money is and the purpose of it. Who in here, though, who believes in compound interest? Most of us. We've all been taught that compound interest is such a great thing. But in order for compounding to actually work, don't we have to let our money, product, goods sit still somewhere? So if I have this $20 bill and I want it to compound, I go down to the bank, I hand over the $20, and now it's inside of my account, compounding. If I go back in a year, a week, a day, and I take out that $20, I've stopped the compounding on the money. But motion's a natural law of God, is it not? Everything in life is about motion. I'm up here, I'm flailing my arms. Earlier today I had lunch, my food's gonna be in motion in me soon. Dad's coming over on an airplane, he's flying over. Everything in life is about motion. Who wants to eat fish out of a stagnant pond? Not myself. Compounding stops that motion. I want you to name me one business in the world that actually uses compound interest. What's the one you're thinking of? Banks. Hannah, banks use compound interest. Let's think about that. Do they use compound interest? No. They pay you compound interest, and they charge you compound interest, but they're not doing it themselves. Here's what I mean. If I take this $20 bill, I highlight it, and I put my initials on it. And I go down to the bank, and I say, hey, Mr. Banker, there's my $20. If I come back in a year, a few hours, 1 hour, and I want to take out my $20, do you think they're going to give me the same one that I highlighted and put my initials on? No, because there's not a black box in the back that says Hannah Kessler, and then they go and just put that $20 bill in there and then wait for me to come back, right? Because what are banks doing? They're moving it, right? Banks are in the lending business. How much does a car dealership make if cars aren't moving on and off the lot? Zero. How much do us in the real estate business make if folks aren't coming in doing rehabs, tenants aren't moving in and out of houses? Zero. So not one business in the world actually uses compound interest. So don't you think it's a little strange that these big major institutions, banks, Wall Street, mutual funds, they all tell us to park our money there with them, but they're not doing it themselves? Isn't that a little strange? I'm just trying to peel back the onion to get y'all to see what's going on. All right, let's talk about your 401k and your IRA. Ooh, okay, and I will exclude those self-directed accounts. I know for my real estate folks, y'all like to use them for your investments. But who in here has a 401k and IRA? Most of us. Why do we have those types of accounts? Well, I have them because later on in life, I want to go and put my money into it so that later on I can take it out and I can live off of this money, right? That's why we have them. Well, I want to ask you some questions about that 401k, that IRA account. Are there any guarantees inside of it? No. Well, there's one guarantee. It's guaranteed to never go below zero. But how fun and exciting would that be if that actually happened? Who controls that account? Is it you or somebody else? Someone else. And even if you do put money into that account, how long do you have to have that money sitting there just to avoid the 10% penalty? Age 59 and a half. Even if you make it to age 59 and a half, you still got to pay the tax on the money, so you're just kicking the can down the street. I want you to tell me everything that you know about that retirement account. No, wait, you don't tell me what you know. I'll tell you what you know. You know whether it goes up or down based on the quarterly statements that you get. Y'all know if it's invested in a low, moderate, or high-risk category. But other than that, y'all don't know jack crap about your retirement plans. There's no guarantees, and somebody else is controlling it. Why are you doing that with your money? You guys told me money is nothing more than a means of exchange. Why are you doing that? Hannah, it's what my parents are doing. It's what my boss told me to do. My friends, my colleagues, that's why I'm doing it. All right, just want y'all to get to see. Here's some other questions I want to ask you. Are taxes going to go up or go down? They're going to go up. And if they don't go up, are we taxing more crap all the time? And our money, our dollars, are they worth more today or in the future? Today. And if you ever forget about that, think about how many candy bars you could buy 10 years ago for $1 and how many you can buy today for $1. And then when you go and you do pay the tax on the money, do you want to pay the tax on the small amount, the seed, or the large amount, the harvest? The seed. I agree with all three of those answers, but you are totally violating them by putting your money in that IRA, that 401k, that qualified plan. Because what you're doing is you're giving up good dollars today to get paid back with non-guaranteed weaker dollars in the future. Then when you go and take the money out of that account, now you're paying tax on the large amount, the harvest. Sounds a little crappy when I put it that way, right? Oh, but here's what y'all tell me. You say, but Hannah, I got one of those really cool special snowflake accounts. I get a match in my account. All right, let's go with your theory. You get a match. If the principal's not guaranteed, I don't know how the match can be guaranteed, but let's go with your theory. You told me money's nothing more than a means of exchange. So let's say I take this $20 bill down to the grocery store, and I buy myself a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. And then I come back home, and I put it into the freezer, and I wait 10, 20, 30 years into the future, and I open up that freezer. Guess what's in there? 2 loaves of bread and 2 gallons of milk. How much more fun and exciting is that second loaf of bread and second gallon of milk going to taste? I think it's still going to be freezer burnt, is it not? All right, I think I beat that one up. We can continue on. Because here's my favorite thing to talk about. Let's talk about how banks work. This is how your local bank works. It doesn't matter where we're at. We can be in Daytona Beach, Florida. We can be right here, Mason, Ohio, Austin, Texas, New York City. This is how your bank works. You, the depositor, you put money into the bank. Let's make believe it's $100,000. Don't get caught up on the numbers. What I really want you to understand is that this is your money. You put money into the bank, and when you put that money into the bank, that deposit is now a liability to the bank because they got to pay you interest on it. So how does the bank turn that liability into an asset? They loan it. They loan it to you or to other people to go buy the things that they're buying in life. Who besides myself has ever gone to the bank and asked to borrow money to buy a house? Okay? Well, let's call it 7%. You walk into the bank. They say, okay, we'll issue you that mortgage. So we're going to take out that loan to you, 7%. If I go and take out a loan from a bank, don't I got to pay them back and pay them back with interest? Absolutely. Because if I don't, what's going to happen? They're going to come and foreclose on me. So money's got to go back into the bank. How about a car? Who besides myself has ever gone down to the bank, asked to borrow money to buy a car? Okay, let's call it 8%. You go into the bank, they get you the loan, 8% interest. What do we got to do now? We got to pay them back. We got to pay them back with interest. If we don't pay them back, we're going to hear that beep, beep, beep as it's coming off your driveway, being towed away. Actually, you should ask Dad about that story. He actually got a car repossessed one time way back in the day. It's kind of silly. So, right? So they will come and they will tow it. So money's got to go back into the bank. How about a home remodel? All right, I want a new swimming pool, new granite countertops. Let's call that 9%. We go down to the bank, take out the loan. What has to happen now? We pay the contractors, then we got to pay the bank back. Money goes back into the bank. Y'all, I hope you see what's going on here. All banks do is they move money in, they move it out. They move it in, they move it out, they move it right back in again. That's all they do. How about a debt consolidation? Let's go and pay off all the credit cards. Let's call that 12%. So we take out the loan, pay off all the debts. Now we got to pay the bank back, got to pay them back with interest. All right, I know it's Friday and it's after lunch and math is not everybody's favorite subject, but we're going to do a little bit of math right now. But I promise it's going to be really easy and really fun, okay? Because here's what I want to do. How well did we do compared to how well the banker did? Remember, we found a really good bank, and that bank's paying us 4% on the money. So, in the first transaction here in the house purchase, bank made 7, we made 4. 7 minus 4 equals 3. I told you it's going to be easy. How about in the car? Bank made 8, we made 4. 8 minus 4 equals 4. And the home remodel, bank made 9, we made 4. 9 minus 4 equals 5. And then lastly, the debt consolidation. Bank made 12. We made 4. 12 minus 4 equals 8. That was good. That one's usually the hardest one. So if you add all of those up there, bank made 20%. We made 4%. How much better did the bank do than us? 16%, right? 16%, Hannah. No. How about 500% more than we did? Because doesn't 4 go into 25 times? Banks are making no less than 400 to 1300% annually on the money that we leave there with them. And I want you guys to go fact check me on this stuff. Here's another resource, BauerFinancial.com, B-A-U-E-R, BauerFinancial.com. Y'all, Dad and I have been traveling around teaching this stuff since 2012. We started practicing it in 2008, started teaching it full-time in 2012. Prior to COVID, we were speaking at anywhere from 50 to 70 live events a year. And I asked the audience this same question. Go find me a bank that makes less than 400% annually on the money that we leave there with them. And I challenge you to do that, because if you do find me a bank that makes less than 400%, you owe it to me to call me up and tell me, and I will change this presentation slide and I'll give you the credit for it. Hasn't happened yet. And I want y'all to go look this up. If you kind of think about it, though, it just kind of makes a little bit of sense, though, right? It doesn't matter where we're at in the world. We could be right here, Mason, Ohio, Daytona Beach, Florida, LA, California. You drive into town, and there's a main intersection in town. And there's four corners on that intersection. What is one of the buildings on those four corners? A bank. And are banks on the bad landscaping, bad architecture, rundown property? No, they're like the nicest buildings in town. Matter of fact, sometimes if you walk into banks, they'll actually give you free stuff, right? And a bank in our town in Daytona Beach, if you go in there on a certain day of the week, they'll give you wine. They'll give you wine. And that's why Dad couldn't be here today, because he went to the bank six times yesterday, so he's in bed hungover. I'm just kidding. But y'all, how much risk did the bank take in doing all of this? Not a lot, because whose money are they using? They're using your money. Now, I do agree interest rates offset the risk, but if you're too risky of a borrower anyways, is that banker even going to loan you the money? No. So here's what I'm saying. You guys are doing this already in your lives. You're buying houses, you're buying cars, you're doing home remodels, and you're using credit cards. Why don't you just be the banker in your own life where you get to make that 400 to 1300% annually, right? That's all I'm saying. Okay, I think we beat that one up. Y'all, really look into that, though. It's called fractional reserve lending. That's what banks do, fractional reserve lending. I talk about it all the time. I got a podcast show called the Money Multiplier Podcast, and that's what I talk about all the time. But anywho, let's keep going. I'm going to skip this section today just because of time, but I'll show you how you can go back and rewatch all of this. Moving forward, you guys have your packets, or handouts, I should call them. If you don't have a handout, raise your hand, and the team in the back will come up and...
We're out.
I got some. Now, and then, so we'll come around, we'll hand these out, and if we have to, we might just have to share. Thank you. All right, because everything that I'll go through will be in there. And then also, I'll show you how you can go back and rewatch this whole entire presentation as well. All right, but we're going to get into the really, really fun stuff. I told you I was going to show you how to get all the money back for the cars. So let's talk about that. So real quick, let's recap. What is the machine that we're using to build our wealth? The machine we're using is a specifically engineered whole life insurance policy with a mutually owned company that pays dividends. Again, the policy's just got to be designed for this high cash value banking. So, in the policy, there's premiums. All right, y'all, here's where the mindset shift starts to happen. Premiums are deposits. I call them premium deposits. Why do I call them premium deposits? Because when you put your premium inside of that policy, you have access to cash value immediately. My definition of immediately is within 30 days. So if I put money inside of an account that I own and I control, is that treated more as a payment or a deposit? Deposit. What word do you like better, payment or deposit? Deposit. So premium deposits go into that policy, and that's you capitalizing the bank. Then there's age and death benefit on that policy. You'll notice age and death benefit are grayed out. You know why they're grayed out? Because they do not matter. Ooh, but Hannah, I'm a type A analytical. I need you to cover age and death benefit, or I'm not going to get anything you say moving forward. Okay, so let's cover age and death benefit, and we'll do it quickly. So let's say that I have three individuals, age 20, 40, and 60, all in the same equal health, and they have a $20 bill in their pocket. They all walk into the grocery store. Who between the three individuals are going to be able to buy the most amount of groceries with their $20? All of them. Doesn't matter how good you look, how bad you smell, color of your skin, the language that you speak. Same $20 is going to buy you the same amount of groceries. Well, let's walk across the street to the life insurance store. 20, 40, and 60, all in the same equal health. Who's going to be able to buy the most amount of death benefit with their $20? The younger one. That just makes sense, right? But I'm not here talking to you about death benefit. I really don't even care that there's a death benefit on the policy. That's going to be there whether we like it or not. I'm here talking about the cash and the financing that comes from the policy. And I really want to drive that one home, because I'm going to get done here today and someone's going to come up to me and say, Hannah, that was a really, really cool concept, but I'm too old to do this. No, you're not. Just because you're older, you're going to have a lower death benefit compared to somebody like me who's a Gen Z millennial, right? Okay. So in this example, this individual says, okay, I want to start my policy, and I'm going to do $10,000 a year as my premium deposits inside of this policy. Now, $10,000 is a number that he chose. You get to determine what that premium is that you want to deposit into the policy. If $10,000 is too large, shave off a zero, do $1,000. If $10,000 is too easy, add a zero, do $100,000. I don't care what you do. You tell me what you want to deposit into your policy. Did I ever tell you how much money to put in your policy? Never. Victor, did I tell you? Never. So, I see you. So you get to determine what that premium deposit is that you want to put into your policy. So in this example, he says, all right, I'm going to do $10,000 a year. And now you can do premiums on a monthly, quarterly, twice a year, or annual basis too. You can also pick the mode. But he says, okay, I'm going to do $10,000 a year into my policy, and I'm going to be paying it for 7 years. Now, year four, I'm going to take out $25,000 because I'm going to go purchase a car. Real quick, I would never have you wait till 4 years to start using the cash inside of your policy. When you make that premium deposit into the policy, how quickly do we have access to cash value in there? Immediately, within 30 days. I'm just doing this to isolate the car purchase. So in year four, we take out $25,000, and we're going to go purchase a car for ourselves. $25,000 comes from the cash value that's inside of that policy. We take out the $25,000, we walk down to the car dealership, we hand them over the money, they hand us the car, everybody walks away, transaction's done. But now, because you borrowed from yourself, don't you think it's a good idea that you should pay yourself back and pay yourself back with interest? Yes. Do we ever do it, though? No. So here's what y'all got to do. Treat your money how you treat the bank's money. If you don't, all you're saying is your money is not as valuable as the banker's money. And that's just simply not the truth. So pay yourself back and pay yourself back with interest and play that honest banker with yourself and in your life. So he says, okay, because I took out a loan for 25, I'm going to pay myself back $500 a month, $6,000 a year for the next 5 years. So let's see what happened here from year one to year eight. Year one to year eight, he put in $70,000 as his premium deposit, plus $30,000 for the car repayment, plus interest he charged himself. So a total of $100,000 has gone into the policy, but he took out $25,000 to go purchase that car. So $100,000 went in, he took out $25,000. 100 minus 25 is 75,000. So 75,000 is our true net injection, but I'm sitting here with 73,226 inside of that policy. If I take 73,226 and divide it into 75,000, you just got back 97 cents for every dollar that you spent on that car. Hannah, I'm not understanding. I took out the money. How is it still growing even though I took out the money? All right, listen up. Remember when I told y'all about paying cash for things? All right, if you've been sleeping up to this point, here's what you got to start waking up for. When you start to filter the money through the policy first, when that money hits the policy, now starts the time clock of the uninterrupted compounding interest that's happening inside of that policy. When he went in and he took out the $25,000 to go purchase the car, he is not borrowing or withdrawing from his actual cash bucket. What he did is he put that policy up for collateral, and he took a loan from the general funds of the insurance company. He's using the insurance company's money out here in the real world, which allows his money to sit in the policy to grow and compound as if it was never even touched. I think that's cooler than cool. That's just 8 years, y'all. 8 years goes by pretty darn quick in our lifetime, does it not? Let's continue on. So we got back 97 cents. That's better than what we're doing now. Because how much do you get? Oops. So it was mama that was driving for the last 5 years. Now it's daddy's time to go pick a car up because he's been walking. So daddy's in the market. He wants to go buy another $25,000 car. Where does the $25,000 come from? The cash value that's inside the policy. He is no longer paying his premiums inside of this policy any longer. Now, if I'm a good coach, though, you will quickly understand that you want to pay premiums for as long as you can and as much as you can. But again, I'm just isolating the car purchase here. So no more premium deposits are going in. We took out the 25 and we're going to go purchase a second car. We take out the money, go down to the car dealership. They got the 25. We have the car. Transaction's done. We're just going to do the same thing that we did last time. Pay myself back with interest. $500 a month, $6,000 a year for the next 5 years. Let's see what happened from year 9 to year 13. You put in $30,000 for that car repayment plus interest. $30,000 went in. But I took out 25 for the car. 30 went in, I took out 25, so my true net injection is 5,000. But Hannah, I'm sitting here in year 13 with 95 and some change as cash value in the policy. Are you telling me that's true? With a $5,000 net injection, my cash just grew over $22,000? Yes. I don't want to get cheesy on y'all, but have you heard about the gentleman named Albert Einstein? Albert Einstein says compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Those who understand it earn it, and those who don't pay it. What do you think we've been doing all these years being consumers of the central banks? We've been paying all of it. So now I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. Now I know how to play the game with them. I'm just going to play it right along there with them. And y'all, 13 years, for my folks in the room who are 55 years old, doesn't it just seem like yesterday you were 43? Oh, 13 years goes by quick. I'm about to freak y'all out. 13 years ago, I was 11 years old. Oof. Right? Let's see what happened, though, because 13 years, like I said, it goes by pretty darn quick. From year 1 to year 8, we put in $70,000 plus 30 plus another 30. So we put in a total of 130 inside of this policy. But we took out 25 for car 1 and 25 for car 2. We put in 130, we've taken out 50. Put in 130, taken out 50. 130 minus 50 is 80,000. So 80,000 is my true net injection. I'm sitting here with 95 and some change as cash value in the policy. Plus, I got two cars that are sitting on the driveway. How do you like buying cars my way now? But y'all, I can't sit here and tell you that it costs you nothing to buy, drive, and own these cars. Because that's how my simple mind is thinking. Hey, if I put an 80 into this thing, I'm sitting here with 95, I made like 15,000, right? That's how my simple mind thinks. But I can't sit here and tell you that it costs you nothing to buy, drive, and own the cars. Because you had to start the system. Year one, when you put in that 10,000, he did not have access to the full 10,000 yet. But are you in this for the short term or the long term? You tell me long term, but y'all tend to get hung up in short term thinking. This is why I'm saying that it's the additional step that we're adding to our financial life. I do not keep money down at the local bank. I keep no more than about 3 months of my overhead expenses. Everything else, it's being stored inside the policies if it's not being deployed in active investments that I like to do. Now, this is just for cars. And I told you, the reason I use cars is just because we all get cars. How about instead of this being a $25,000 car, it's a $2,500 MacBook computer. And you're putting in $1,000 a year premium deposits. What happens to the numbers? They're just smaller. Does the concept still work the same? Yes. How about instead of that being a car, it's a $250,000 house. And you are doing $100,000 premium deposits. What happens to the numbers? They're just bigger. Does the concept still work the same? Yes. I don't care what it is, y'all. You are now turning every liability into an asset, every depreciating asset into an appreciating asset, just by simply funneling it through your policies, your own banking system now. All right, for my investors in the room, all right, I'm a private lender. That's just what I like to do, my investments. Let's say somebody calls me up. They say, Hannah, I need $25,000 because I'm going to go do a rehab. Where do you think I pulled the $25,000 from? My policies. So who do you think is paying me back now these $500 a month, $6,000 a year? My borrowers. Ooh, that just got interesting, Hannah. I like that. So it doesn't matter what you're into, what investments, because I'm never going to tell y'all how to go invest your money, how to make your money. All I'm showing you is about the banking business in your life, the business that finances everything in all of your transactions throughout your life. Okay, rule number one, pay yourself first. All right, if y'all have been sleeping up to this point, again, you should be waking up. Pay yourself first. I know you guys have heard this before, but when I say pay yourself first, what you do is you get money in. I don't care how you make the money. It's active, passive, birthday money from grandma. You go and you produce the money and it comes into you. Then what do? You go pay everybody else first. The house people, the car people, Bobby's soccer practice, Susie's piano lessons, and you just hope that there's some leftover for you. Stop that. Start treating yourself as your number one asset. When you get money in, take a sliver of it and set it to the side. That's you paying yourself first. I teach y'all it should be anywhere from 10 to 30%. So pay yourself first. Rule number two, pay yourself back and pay yourself back with interest. Treat your money just how you treat the banker's money. Again, because if you don't, you're just saying the banker's money is more valuable than your money. And then rule number three, recycle and recapture the money. If it works for a car, what else does it work for? Taxes. Ooh, y'all. October 15th was just here. I had to pay the IRS. I know all of y'all got to pay the IRS. How about my New York folks and my Californians in the room? You guys got to pay taxes. How do you think I pay the taxes? Policy money. How about charitable giving? Ooh, Hannah, that's not right. God does not want me to get my charitable giving back. Well, if God did not want you to get your charitable giving back, he would not have you be sitting in this room learning how to get all the money back. Do you know any poor people adding any wings to any churches? I don't. I don't care what it is. We are now turning every liability into an asset just by filtering it through the system now. Okay, did I just show you how to get all the money back for all the cars you're going to buy, drive, and own? Let's continue on. Oh, here's some resources for you. Robert Kiyosaki, I know you know that name. Robert Kiyosaki, in his book, Second Chance, he talks about this infinite banking concept. But what did y'all do? You read right through it. You didn't think a second thing of it because it's never been explained to you this way. How about Tony Robbins, Money Master the Game? Chapter 5.4 in that book, Tony Robbins talks about this concept. There's another gentleman, Larry Steinhaus. Larry Steinhaus wrote a book called Money Hacks. If y'all don't know Larry, you should go up and follow him. He lives up in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, right outside Philadelphia. Chapter 13 in his book, Larry talks about this concept. And I love the book title, by the way, too. It says, because everything you think you know about money is wrong. I think it's good. So just more resources for y'all, okay? Go out and just explore this stuff. Okay, here's my last segment that I'm going to get into here today. This right here is called the Money Multiplier Map. I told you that my family, when we got introduced into this, Dad was in almost $1 million of debt. You know, he was a very successful chiropractor, but Dad was actually the one who taught me, hey, Hannah, I could be making $1 million a year, but if my overhead's 950, who in the hell cares how much I make? Because it only matters how much I keep. So this right here is called the Money Multiplier Map, and this gets created for all of our members. So what we do is, if y'all want to practice this concept, hopefully you'll want to practice it with me, because this is all that I do. I'm 100% the infinite banking concept. So we help our folks obtain the policy, design it properly for your needs, your goals of what's going on. And then once you have the policy, how do I start using it? Because it's all about the process of banking. It's not about the product. So this is something, a tool that we create for our folks when we meet with them 3 to 4 times a year. So, again, this is in your handouts as well. You can follow along in there. You can watch me up here. But this right here, it's a real-life example. It's actually one of Dad's chiropractic colleagues. His name's Dr. Gunny. He lives up in Minnesota. But Dr. Gunny came to us, and he said, Brent, I need help. I have this financial catastrophe, this financial mess, and I need some help getting out of it. So when Dr. Gunny showed up at our door, he had these 13 third-party debts. And I'm sorry, my laser's not working today. But he had these 13 third-party debts right here. And if you line them up all the way from left to right, he's got Discover, Chase, Amex, Barclays, Lowe's, Nordstrom's, Private Loan, BMW, West Marine, condo, and a house. So those 13 debts is what he showed up at our front door with. And if you look in there, you can see what the total balance is, what the monthly payment is, the interest rate, and then how much longer he's got to pay on that loan. If you add them all up, Discover all the way to the house, he's got about $470,000 of debt. $469,000 to be exact. So I, however, I like to underpromise and overdeliver. So we're going to make believe that he has $450,000 of debt. So here's what I want you to do. Write 450 at the top of your page there. $450,000 is what he owes to the third-party people. In this example, Dr. Gunny says, okay, I can put away $25,000 a year into this policy. And reminder, 25 is what he chose. When I started my first policy at 18 years old, I was still a waitress at Cracker Barrel. Do you think I could freaking afford $25,000 a year? No. I started my first policy $400 a month. So start where you're at right now. So $25,000 is what he says I'm going to put into this policy. So in normal traditional sense, if he were to just take this $25,000 and go pay it directly to the debts each year, how long is it going to take him to pay off these debts? Well, we take $25,000, divide it into 450, 18 years. It's going to take him 18 years to pay off this debt. So write 18 years at the top of your paper. But he says, Brent, I heard your story, and I want to see how you did it. So how did you go and use the policy to go and pay off the debt? So what he's going to do, he puts in his premium deposit of $25,000 into that policy. Immediately underneath the loan available, he's got access to 14,366. What's my definition of immediately? Within 30 days. So what he's going to do is he's going to take the 14,3 and start paying off debts. He pays off Discover, pays off Chase, pays off Amex, pays off Barclays, and pays Lowe's down from $9,500 down to $7,600. Now what he's going to do is the monthly payments he was sending to Discover, Chase, Amex, and Barclays, he's just going to redirect that and pay himself that monthly payment. Is he working any harder by doing so? No, because you were already accustomed to paying that money to the creditors. Now you're just paying it back to yourself. So you'll notice in that miscellaneous account, that's all that is. It's nothing more than just a segregated checking account down at the local bank. So now since he paid off those four credit cards, he's paying himself now $788 a month. Following. Okay. And write down your questions. We'll get into them too. So now he's just paying himself back the $788 a month for that first year. Sun goes up, sun goes down. Is there anything stupid, ridiculous, or idiotic that I'm doing? No, man, I just bought a stupid-ass life insurance policy, and I'm using it for my banking purposes. Ooh, Hannah, that wasn't nice. Why'd you use the word ass? Well, because some of y'all are texting, a few of you are sleeping, and I don't know what it is about that word, but y'all just pop right back up, and you're back here up at the screen. So, hi, welcome back to class. All right, year two. Year two rolls around. Premium comes due again. Because remember, these are his premium deposits. We are so gung-ho to go deposit and capitalize other people's banks. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, etc., etc. Do not be afraid to capitalize your bank and your banking system. So year two rolls around. He puts in $25,000. Well, now he's got access to $14,800. Ooh, it's higher year two. So $14,800 is what he takes out of that policy, and he adds it to what he was paying himself back last year. He takes the $14,800 plus the $94,000 for a total of $24,000. He takes the $24,000, he pays off Lowe's, pays off Nordstrom's, pays off Wells Fargo, and pays BMW down from $17,000 down to $15,000. So he takes what he was paying Lowe's, Nordstrom's, Wells Fargo, and he adds it to that 788. So now he's paying himself back a total of $1,622 a month. You'll notice right here in month 18, the private loan, this gets paid off in the normal course of the loan. So once that private loan gets paid off, he takes what he was sending to them, and now he adds it to the $1,622 for a total of $2,500 each and every month is what he's paying himself back. Following. Okay. Anything ridiculous, idiotic here that we're doing? No. I'm just snowballing the debt down. Dave Ramsey, you kind of love me now, don't you? All right, that's year two. Went into year two. Let's walk into year three. So we got some more debts. Let's keep walking on. Year three rolls around. $25,000 goes into the policy as premiums. Well, I got access to $22,000 and some change. Y'all see how it gets more powerful year after year? It's because of that uninterrupted compounding that's happening inside the policy. The longer you have the policies, the more mature and efficient it gets. So 25 goes in, he's got access to 22. He takes the 22, adds it to what he was paying himself back last year for a total of 48,000. He takes the 48,000 and he pays off BMW and he pays down West Marine, the boat loan, from 47,000 down to 8,000. We're not doing anything yet for the boat loan because we haven't paid it off yet. We only take what we were paying to BMW. We add that. And then you can see finally, month 27, that's when the boat loan gets paid off. We just take that, add it to what we're paying ourselves back already. Sun goes up, sun goes down. All I'm doing is I'm just using this stupid policy to go and pay off the debts. You guys got to go pay off the debts anyways. So that's in year three. Walking into year three, great. Now we continue to pay ourselves back $4,300 a month over the course of year three. Let's move on. Let's go to year four. I think we're a little ahead of schedule right now, would you say? Because right now, all we got left are the condo and the house. And how long did I tell you it's going to take us to pay all this off? 18 years. So we walk into year four. I put in 25,000. I got access to 25,900. Sir, if you came to my driveway and you handed me 25 and I turned around, handed you 26, how often would you come to my driveway?
Every day.
Every single day. Multiple times a day, right? Multiple times. So I put in 25. I got access to 25,900. This is what I'm talking about with the power of the uninterrupted compounding. I take that 25,900, add it to the 41 I was paying myself back last year for a total of 67. I take the 67, I don't have enough yet. I paid the condo down from 81 down to 12,000. I do not add anything to what I'm already paying myself back because I haven't paid it back yet, or excuse me, paid it off yet. So I just keep going on $4,300 a month over that next year. Am I working any harder, taking any additional risk, or losing control by doing this? No. Now we're here to month 48, the end of year four, and now we paid off finally the condo. Let's talk about this. Because how much money have we put into the policy up to this point? Over the course of the 3 years. 25 in year one, 25 in year two, 25 in year three. How much did we take out from the policy up to this point? 14 and some change year one, 14 and some change year two, 22,000 and some change. So we've put in 75, but I've taken out 50. How much is left inside the policy growing and compounding? 25, I thought, right? No, it's a full 75,000. I kind of gave the secret away a little early. Oops. But it's the full $75,000, right? Because remember, when you call into the insurance company and you want to take out that loan, you're not withdrawing your actual cash. You put that policy up for collateral, and we're using their money out here in the real world. And that's why that money still continues to grow and compound as if it was never even touched. I don't know any other vehicle on this planet that does that. And if y'all know of something, please tell me. You call me up and tell me, because we've been looking for the last 14 plus years now. Okay. So now we're walking into year 5, right? So we ended year 4. We paid off the condo, and all we have left now is the house. Year 5 rolls around. $25,000 goes in. You come to me, you hand me 25, I turn around, hand you 27. You love me even more now. You probably give me a hug, maybe a kiss. Okay, too far? So 25 goes in, we got access to 26.8. We take what we were paying through year 4, the 51 here, and we add it to the 26.8 for a total of 78,000 as available cash that we can use. We take the $78,000 and we pay down the house. We don't have enough yet. We pay the house down from 181 down to 102. We're not paying ourselves back anymore. We haven't paid back the house yet or paid off the house yet. Thus, we just keep trucking along with those monthly payments. Once a debt has gotten paid off, we just redirect that, start paying ourselves back now. Year six rolls around. $10,000. Wait, I thought I was supposed to be paying $25,000. Why is my premium only $10,000 now? Okay, because I have the time, I'm going to get into something, a little bit of the engineering behind the policies. You really don't have to know this, all right? So if you're not really an analytical, you can go to sleep for just a little bit. But inside of these policies, there's two moving parts that come together and make up that full premium that's going towards the policy. Have you guys ever seen the space shuttle take off into space? Yes? The base of the shuttle, that is your base premium. Then you got these two booster rockets that are attached onto the side. Those are called your paid up addition riders. We'll call them PUA sometimes for short. But the majority of that $25,000, is going into those booster rockets, the paid up additions. Why do they go into there? Well, that's what gets our rocket ship out of the sky and out of the atmosphere. So in the policy world, that's where our early years cash values are coming from and why we're able to take out those early years cash values. But as time goes on and our rocket ship is out of the atmosphere, it's got more aged and seasoned and maturity on it, what happens to the booster rockets? They fall off. They fall off the rocket ship. And why do they fall off? Because they're just simply not needed anymore to keep sustaining on our journey of where we're going. Same thing right here in the policy world. The booster rockets, aka the paid up addition riders, they fall off our policy later on in the policy's life because it's just simply not needed anymore. And that's why you see the premium drops as well. Now, get this, we put in $10,000, immediately we got access to $13,000. I'm no math genius or anything, but I know if I put in $10 into something and then I immediately turn around and have $13, that's a 30% growth on my money right there. How much of your money do you want grown at 30%? Hopefully the answer is all of it. So he puts in 10, he immediately has 13. He also opens up a second policy, a branch office of his bank. Here's a question I get sometimes too. Well, Hannah, why does he open up a second policy, a branch office? Why wouldn't he just increase his premiums on his first policy, the existing one? Well, the answer is, We can't just go into an existing policy and increase those premiums. What you have to do is you have to go in and you have to start additional policies. So I told you, when I was 18, I started my first policy, $400 a month. Well, I got older, I was making more income, my assets were rising, and I had a need to want to do more than $400 a month inside of my existing policy. I can't just go in there and increase those premiums. So all you do is you just open up a second policy, a branch office of your bank. Just like how Wells Fargo, they got a bank on Main Street and a bank on 3rd Street, you can have branch offices of your bank. Talk to Pops. Pops has 28 of these freaking things. I'm just trying to catch up to him, right? Okay, so that's why. That's why he opens up the second policy, because things are going great, life is going good, and he wants more cash flow going into these things. So, year 6, we take the 13, add it to what we were paying ourselves back last year, plus the 14 that's coming from policy number 2, for a total of $93,000. We take the $93,000 and we completely pay off the house. Where are we at right now? We're in month 61, beginning of year 6, and we just paid off 13 third-party debts. How long did they tell us it was going to take us to pay all this off? 18 years. It didn't take 18, didn't take 15, 10 years. It took 5 years and 1 month, 61 months. Let's look at this, though, too. This is very powerful. What have we put into the policy up to this point? Year 1, 25. Year 2, 25. 3, 4, 25. 5, 25. And year 6, we did 10,000 and then another 25. So we've done a total of 160 is our net injection as our premiums into this policy. We put in a total of 160, and we just paid off $450,000 of debt. Do you see how it took my dad only 3 years to pay off the debt now? He didn't do anything magical. All he did was just funnel the money through the policy first. Now, this doesn't have to just be debt, right? I mean, when I was 18, I didn't have debt, but I got expenses. How comfortable is it in Florida in the middle of August if you don't have AC in the house? Not very. How comfortable is it here in Mason, Ohio in the middle of February without heat? I know y'all like to eat. I've been seeing y'all over the past 24 hours. And I know you got to put gasoline in the car. So don't just think about it as debt. Think about it as the ongoing expenses, the taxes, the charitable giving, whatever you got going on in your life, you're just using the banking system to now do it. Okay. I'm not going to go through this just because of time right now. This is interesting. This is saying, hey, if I just keep paying myself back the same amount of payments I already promised to the bank, where would I be at? Y'all, and I'm telling you, it kind of makes sense now why banks are everywhere. All right, Hannah, you're just a young girl up there. You're flapping your gums and moving your lips. How do I know this stuff is really true? So actually, here's an article that was posted on ESPN. Dad and I were actually out in Denver, Colorado. He was about to go up on stage and give a presentation. And this article popped up, November 16th, 2016. Cash Value Life Insurance makes Harbaugh College football's top paid coach. The University of Michigan is doing this stuff. How about Disneyland? Walt Disney wanted to start Disneyland, but after failing in the pursuits of traditional means of financing, meaning that Walt walked into a bank and he said, y'all, I got this great idea. It's called Mickey Mouse Donald Duck. Will you give me a loan? And they kind of laughed at him. So what Walt had to do, he had to provide his own financing, and a large portion of this came from collaterally borrowing from his life insurance policies. Who knows if Disneyland would even be here if Walt didn't have those policies. How about Ray Kroc with McDonald's? Ray Kroc partnered with the McDonald's brothers and opened the first McDonald's in 55. Kroc did not take salary for the first 8 years, And to help with cash flow, he borrowed from his two life insurance policies to pay the salaries of the key employees. He also used some of the money to finance for an advertising campaign that we know of as Ronald McDonald. Speaking of, I haven't seen Ronald McDonald in a while. Have y'all? I don't know what he's up to. Ooh, the Pampered Chef. This is one of my favorite stories. Using $3,000 she borrowed from her life insurance policy, Doris Christopher started the Pampered Chef in her suburban Chicago home. By 2002, the company had grown into a $700 million operation that then was acquired by Warren Buffett for $1.5 billion. Billion with a B. That's a powerful story. All right. Everything that I've gone through with y'all up to this point has been fact. Now, here's just my opinion. Now that you know this, everybody should be doing it. Because if you don't do this, you're stealing from yourselves, your family, and future generations to come because you're letting the money leave the family. All I'm doing is I'm just closing the gap right there, and I'm keeping that money within the family. Y'all know that this guy too, Warren Buffett. I don't remember when Warren Buffett said this, but I remember Dad started to bring it around the kitchen table back in 2008. Warren Buffett said if poor people would just start doing what rich people do, they wouldn't be poor anymore. How much freaking sense does that make? Y'all, and I'm not reinventing the wheel. Y'all, there's us and the super wealthy. Us and the super wealthy. We all got access to the same financial tools, do we not? It's just how the wealthy are using those tools is different from us, the masses. And I get it, because they don't teach us this stuff. Y'all, I just graduated high school back in 2017. I know what they teach us in high school, okay? They're not teaching us this stuff. Anywho, I think I got to get off the stage soon. All right, one of two things is going to happen to us. We're either going to live or we're going to die. I like to use the word graduate. You can use whatever words you want to use. But if we live, are we better off with or without this concept? Hopefully I showed you with. And if we die, pass, or graduate, are beneficiaries better off with or without this concept? Yeah, there's a death benefit that's on that policy. How much did I even talk about death benefit today? Not a lot. How much did I even talk about life insurance? Not a lot. Y'all, this whole life policy is just the vehicle you can do all of this. If I could get all the money back using these plastic water bottles, I'd be hooting and hollering to you about how cool these plastic water bottles are. But it's not. It's just whole life insurance. Policies are exempt from judgments and liens in most states. Yeah. If you, God forbid, if you ever get sued, no one can come after the money that's sitting inside of your policies. Y'all remember the guy O.J. Simpson? Yeah? O.J. was found not guilty in the criminal trial, but he was found guilty in the civil trial for killing the Goldman boy. Did the Goldman family ever get any money? No. Where was O.J.'s money? In his life insurance. How about the internal values of the policy grow tax-free? Yeah, that's tax-free growth inside of that policy. What's our largest eroder of wealth? Taxes. And loans. Y'all, loans on the policy don't have to get paid back. I'm going to teach you how to play an honest banker. You should pay yourself back and pay yourself back with interest. But is it required? No. You know why? Because there's a death benefit on the policy. At the time of our passing, because I hate to break it to y'all, we're all guaranteed to die. So at the time of our passing, any outstanding loans on the policy will just get subtracted from the death benefit. And death benefit is always higher than the cash available inside of that policy. So the insurance company is going to get made whole again in the end anyways. That's why they never ask you, when you call up to request that money out, what are you using the money for? When are you going to pay it back? And how are you going to pay it back? They don't ask those questions. Or it's like if you go down to the local bank, try to get a loan from them, it's like you got to go through a freaking prostate exam, right? So I'm telling y'all, it's all about controlling the environment of where you're leaving the money at. Okay, this is not the only reason we're doing this, but maybe one of the reasons.
I want to be a billionaire, so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had.
All right, so I am done. If this is something that you just want to talk about, get your questions answered and what you're doing in your own personal situation, the very last page of the handout, you can fill it out for your name, phone number, and email. Come up here. You can set it on the table up here or hand it in to me, but only turn this in if you want to be contacted. I got plenty of friends, okay? So if you want to be contacted, turn it in. If not, go out there, keep doing your research on this stuff. I gave you resources, becoming your own bankers, what I call the Bible of Infinite Banking. If you send me an email, I will send you a copy of our ebook, Mapping Out the Millionaire Mystery. I have a podcast show called the Money Multiplier Podcast. I upload every single Tuesday. It's on YouTube and all streaming platforms. And tonight, Dad is coming into town. He was just in Denver speaking at another event, but he will be here tomorrow. We have a lunch session at 12:30, and then he is going to do this full same presentation at 2 o'clock tomorrow as well. So if you know of somebody who should have been here that's not, have them come to tomorrow's 2 p.m. session. But I am done. I appreciate y'all for being here. Thank you.